is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, wanted to take a minute to shout out our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. We've had their partnership manager and training specialist, Jefferson Mason, and marketing manager, Nick Bartlett, on the show in the past, and we couldn't be more excited about what they're doing for the game of basketball. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market, and truly accelerate skill development faster than ever. Beyond efficient reps, Dr. Dish provides training expertise and versatility designed to develop complete players. The new Dr. Dish CT machine has further revolutionized basketball training with over 150 plus on-demand individual and team workouts from some of the best coaches and trainers in the game. These workouts include video instruction and combine game-like shooting drills with ball handling, conditioning, and agility drills. Along with workouts, the Dr. Dish training management system also provides stat tracking and analytics to track progress and ensure accountability. These are just a few reasons why top programs like Duke, North Carolina, Louisville, Florida, Baylor, and countless others are upgrading to Dr. Dish. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com. Follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. And make sure you mention the Hoopheads podcast to get $300 off your next Dr. Dish purchase. That's a great deal, Hoopheads. Get out and get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
I've been on plenty of bus rides, both as a player and as an assistant coach and as a head coach, where cultures were either made better or made worse by what went on that bus ride.
Jamie Beckler is the author of the new book, The Bus Trip, and is the host of the Success is a Choice podcast. Jamie spent 20 years as a college basketball coach and administrator. His teams were known for their rebounding prowess, and he left his last college as the program's all-time winningest coach. His 2014 Martin Methodist College Redhawks women's team earned the National Champions of Character Award. As a John Maxwell certified leadership coach, Jamie works with organizations and teams across the country to help them achieve their leadership potential and create championship cultures. His work with teams has ranged from the NBA to the Big Ten to small colleges. Beckler grew up in Michigan, where he attended Jonesville High School and played basketball for the legendary Bill Dunn. He's a graduate of Hiram College in Ohio, where he lettered in basketball, football, and track. He earned his master's degree in physical education at Kent State, where he began his coaching career as a graduate assistant under Gary Waters. Please leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. The Hoopheads Pod is available on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, and YouTube. Please consider sharing the Hoopheads Pod with a friend or colleague in the coaching profession and help us continue to grow the game. Get ready for some terrific insights presented through a modern-day sports leadership fable that chronicles a basketball team's bus trip through a challenging season with the author and coach of the book, Jamie Beckler. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads Podcast. It's Mike Lindsing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel. And tonight we are pleased to welcome back to the podcast Jamie Beckler, who has just written a brand new book, The Bus Trip. Jamie, welcome back.
Hey, I appreciate you guys having me back on.
We're excited to have you on, talk a little bit about the book. I had a chance to read it over the past couple days. I think it's going to be very valuable for anyone, coach, player, parent, anyone who picks up a copy of the book is going to get a lot out of it. And I wanted to start by asking you just about the general concept behind the book and why you decided to center the story around a bus trip.
Well, we're always trying to figure out new ways or I guess different ways to get the leadership message out there for kids. And you can't do everything in the world, but you can do something. And so my something is to try to help coaches teach leadership and develop kids and help coaches in that in that area and help kids to develop and be the leaders of our communities one day. And so I'm always trying to figure out how to best do that. And I started thinking about, well, I want to write some fiction. You know, I love the John Gordon books. I love Patrick Lencioni, Todd Gonwehr. You know, he wrote Lead for God's Sake. Love those books, and I think a lot of people do. They resonate with those fictional stories, those fables. And so I was like, you know what? I want to try my hand at this. And so I was fortunate enough to talk with Todd and talk with John Gordon on my podcast, and I asked them about writing the book. And one, I was curious, but two, I was also curious because I wanted to write a book like that. And so we went about writing this fictional book, this modern day sports leadership fable. And you know, thinking what is something that all coaches struggle with? What is something that, you know, goes on all the time? And you know, it's those conversations, those things that happen when the coach isn't around sometimes. And one of the biggest things is, you know, on a bus ride. You know, some of the other things is, you know, just the locker room or a dorm room if you're in college, or a cafeteria. And if you're in a business, it's the water cooler or the break room. You know, those kind of conversations can help or hurt your culture. And so I was like, you know what? I've been on plenty of bus rides, both as a player and as an assistant coach and as a head coach, where cultures were either made better or made worse by what went on that bus ride or on the, you know, the subsequent stops at a truck stop or a restaurant or those kind of things. And so I was like, you know what, let's put this into fiction, but really it's based on true stories. And let's try to make it entertaining. And I think, you know, that will resonate with some people that maybe won't pick up a non-fictional book, you know, one of those self-help leadership books that I've written in the past.
Well, I think it rings true. When I was reading it, it took me back to my times playing college basketball and the bus trips that we would go on. And you just think about those conversations. You think about the stops. You think about, you know, hey, well, you guys got a half hour to go and do this, or you got this amount of time to eat, or hey, let's have this particular conversation with the teammate, or you're moving to a different seat and those kinds of things. So all that stuff really rang true for me. And then the other thing that I found to be interesting, just in the way that you set up the story, was you had the different characters in the book, the different players on the team, have these conversations where one of the players sort of took the lead in terms of being the guy that was kind of coming to the realization first of what the team and the players needed to do. And then you had the other characters who they were having conversations with, who initially their light was turned off. And then a light bulb came on over the course of those conversations. And I thought that was a really interesting way to approach it, as you developed each character and kind of their persona and what the challenge was that they were facing in terms of having the type of success they wanted as an individual player, and then how that impacted the team as a whole. So I really liked how you set that up. So can you talk a little about the process of how you thought out the characters?
Yeah, you know, in general, overall, I'm a firm believer that players can lead themselves, that players can, that they can hold each other accountable, but it's only going to be done when they have a connection or a relationship or a friendship with each other. And so in the book, you know, I don't hit that real heavily, like the background stories of why these people are so close, or the one thing that is subtle is that there's never a conversation going on with people that don't like each other. It's always the conversation with people that are their closest to or their roommates, because that's the reality. The reality is, me as a player, I'm not going to listen to somebody that I'm not real close to. You know, even if they're speaking truth, I'm not going to listen to them. But I might tend to listen to my best friend or my roommate, even if what they're saying isn't something that I want to hear. If I have that relationship with them. And that's the same way with coaches. You know, a player is not going to listen to you if they don't know, like, and trust you as a coach, no matter how smart you are or how many championships you've won. And so I like how you picked up on that in the book. You know, that's the key of this book. The key of this book is that these conversations can take place, but they're only going to take place when you have a connection there. And you know, one in particular that I think might seem strange to some people at first is that there's a freshman on the team that speaks truth to an upperclassman. Bobby speaks truth to Demetrius. Well, they actually play the same position. They're roommates, but Bobby is younger, and Bobby plays the same position and actually starts over Demetrius. But yet they have this relationship because they're friends first. And yes, you know, Demetrius would like to be playing more, but they have this friendship. And so they're able to talk some things through. And that will happen on teams sometimes. You know, we sometimes think that, you know, just because somebody plays over somebody else, they don't like each other. And that's not always the case. So you find these common, this common ground, or you find these relationships throughout the whole book, you know, where they're captains, co-captains, or their best friends, or their roommates, and they talk things through, and they have some difficult conversations, and there's different things along the way that spur these conversations on. You know, the one that that I kind of like is, because I'm a big Michael Jordan fan, is that the star of the team or the leading scorer on the team is always late, and they he loves Michael Jordan. You know, his dad loved Michael Jordan, and he always had this poster of Michael Jordan on his wall, and he loves Michael Jordan. Well, they watch this like 30 for 30 type thing on the bus coming home from the game, and they're talking to Michael Jordan. And the only rule that the Dream Team had in this 30 for 30 episode was always be on time. And, you know, this guy is always late for everything, and he thinks the world revolves around him because he's the leading scorer. He's the best player. And he realizes, well, hey, if this guy I idolize, if he was always the first one on the bus, if he was always first one, even though he was the world's greatest player, you know, the GOAT, then maybe I should start looking at the way I'm doing things. And so little things like that, we wanted to use a lot of different things that could happen. And in the real world, you know, the real world is, not all of these things are going to happen on one bus trip, and not every kid is going to react the way you would want them to, like that, like they do in the book. But the reality also is that you might be able to change some people's thinking. You might be able to, you know, if a kid reads this, they might start to think twice before they complain, or they might have a different perspective on some things that they wouldn't have before the book.
Yeah, I agree. I think you brought in enough, let's call it nonfiction facts into those conversations that made it so that as I was reading it, I felt like, okay, I can relate to this character, or I remember that thing with the Dream Team. And that makes it more real for anybody who's reading the story. And then to go along with that, I think you make a great point about how the characters that were talking together with each other had a relationship. Because I think for anyone who's been on any type of team, you know that although you all are teammates and you're all one team, you do tend to have closer relationships with certain players that are your friends, either by circumstance or, you know, because you're roommates or whatever the case might be, or you've developed a better friendship with them just over the course of time. And those are the people that you tend to have those deeper, more meaningful conversations with. And they're not obviously always about the topics that are discussed in the book, but we know that when you have a better relationship with someone, you're much more likely to have those kinds of conversations. And so as you're reading the story and you're going through and listening to the different conversations between the characters, it definitely comes across that, hey, the reason why these guys are able to have this type of honest discussion is because, as you said, they have a prior relationship, which allows them to accept the other person's point of view and to start thinking about, hey, how can I change? Why is this happening to me? How can I make my situation better for me? But also, I thought that a theme that ran through it was, in each conversation, there was not only the talk about how it impacted that individual player and their experience on the team, but also then there was this trickle-down effect of, well, if things are better for you, that's going to ultimately make things better for us collectively as a team. And I liked how you kind of wove those two themes through the same conversation.
Yeah. I'm glad that you picked up on all of that. I appreciate that. And you know, I when I wrote the book, I was writing it. Certainly I wanted it to be enjoyable and somewhat entertaining, but I also wrote it from the viewpoint of, all right, if I was still coaching, whether it was, you know, I coached my whole career at college, but if I was coaching college or high school, what would I want my players to hear? What would I want them to read if I gave them a book? You know, what would I be telling them? Because sometimes, you know, a coach will say some things, but the players tune them out, or it's good to have a different voice. And so, you know, we've already had teams buy this book. It's only been out a few weeks, but we've already had teams buy this book for, or coaches buy this book for their teams. And so I went at it from that perspective and that approach of what would I want my players to hear from somebody else. And so I went about writing that, and, you know, we don't obviously address every single topic that can come up for a team, but we did try to address some major topics. You know, we have entitled players, we have players that are late, we have a co-captain who's only a co-captain because he's a senior. There's two seniors, And a lot of high school coaches can relate to this, where the seniors are the captains, whether they deserve it or not. Well, this kid doesn't deserve it, but he's a co-captain. He's not playing, and his dad is ticked off. You know, I think a lot of coaches out there can relate to something like that. You know, we have a number of different situations that occur, and we couldn't do everything, but we tried to do some of the key things, and some of the things that I think, at least in my mind, were prevalent when I was coaching.
Yeah, I love the conversation where the father had come in to talk to the coach, and the father didn't have the whole picture. The father was not given the truth by his son in terms of what actually was going on and why he may not have been getting the playing time that the father from the outside, who was only hearing half the story from his son, you know, may have perceived. And I thought that was something that I'm sure that happens a lot, where, you know, a parent has one perspective and they don't really see or know or understand what goes on behind the scenes during practice, in the locker room, getting on the bus, and all those things combined to, obviously, we know as coaches that there's a lot that goes into determining who gets out on the floor to play, and not all of it is visible on Friday night or Saturday afternoon during the game. Much more of it is determined in times where there's nobody there watching. And I just found it really interesting that in that conversation, it took the player a little bit of time to talk it through, to kind of come to the realization that, yeah, maybe it's not the best idea for my dad to come in and talk to the coach when I'm still either doing X, Y, or Z things that I shouldn't be, and I'm not doing A, B, and C of the things that I should be doing. I thought that was something that really would help. And I guess I thought of this a lot from a high school player's perspective. I think that would really help a high school player to kind of get an idea of some of the things that they needed to take care of themselves before they looked externally to their parents for help in terms of playing time.
Yeah. And that's what, if you ask me, you know, what is my goal in writing this book, or why did I write this book now necessarily, or what did I want the end game to be with this? It's that players would read this book and understand that they don't have to wait for a captain or a coach or a situation to dictate how they lead, that they can lead anywhere that they're at on a team. They can influence in any role or with any status that they have. Everybody together makes up the team. It's not the two captains. It's not the coach. It's not the bus driver, the trainer. It's not the circumstances. It's them, each one of them taking personal responsibility in the areas that they can take personal responsibility in. You know, we have the one conversation where, you know, the two players are late to the same practice and their punishments aren't quite the same. And obviously, you know, most of us have been there before, you know, and, you know, if we dole out punishments that are unequal, man, it's like the end of the world. You know, parents are upset. Well, why did this happen? Players are upset because everyone wants equality, but they talk it through, and the one player took responsibility, apologized, and they had also never been in trouble before. The other player was constantly screwing up, and he also didn't take responsibility. And so the punishments may have been fair, but they weren't equal. And so they kind of talk that through. And some of these conversations in the book take longer. You know, some of the chapters are longer than maybe others, because some people are maybe hard-headed, or they've had more years of bad habits, or more years of having excuses and making excuses and not taking responsibility. You know, So each conversation is slightly different, but yeah, you're right. And earlier when you said we pull in real world examples, we do. You know, there's a fictional, and I put that in air quotes, a fictional press conference that they see on ESPN on the bus ride home of, you know, that I took directly from a real life incident that happened, where a coach goes off on a player on live TV and, you know, the world loses its mind about how that's not right. The coaches lost control, but the player takes full responsibility for, you know what, I was letting down my team. I wasn't doing what was right. And so that leads into players on the bus talking about, would I have done that? Am I coachable enough? Do I really care about our culture? Because the kid in this highlight or this press conference on TV talks about, you know what, we have a culture here. We have a standard where things are acceptable and not acceptable, and what I did was not acceptable. And so the players and the bus rider then talking about, hey, well, do we have this standard? Do we have this culture? Would I have done what he did? You know, maybe I'm more worried about myself and my personal agenda than I'm worried about the culture. Maybe that's why we're not winning and this other team wins.
Yeah, and anybody who reads that, who's a college basketball fan, will instantly recognize that particular situation when they come across it in the book. I love what you said a second ago, Jamie, about the fact that anyone can be a leader at any point, anywhere. And I think that that's something that sometimes as players we lose sight of. And I think sometimes as coaches we lose sight of that. We put a lot of faith maybe in our captains, and we don't do a lot of training, as you are well aware, of our captains. We say, okay, you're the captain. And okay, well, what does that mean? I don't know. I mean, I was a captain in high school of my team. I was a captain in college of my team. And I can't remember ever having a conversation with either of my coaches saying, well, what does that mean? How do I do that? How do I do that job well? And I think by empowering every player in this story to be able to show some leadership. And as you said, would all these conversations take place in one bus trip, and would every single conversation turn out as positively as they all did? Chances are that might not happen. But what I will say is that I think one of the things that we take for granted is, as a leader, you may have, like we talked about earlier, there's people on your team that you have a closer, better relationship with. And those are the people that you probably want to start with as a leader. So I may not be able to influence all 15 players on my high school team or all 15 players on my college team. I may not have that kind of standing with the entire group. I just may have personalities that I can't reach. But if I have a group of two or three that are my closest friends on the team or my best teammates, I may be able to reach them and have an impact on them, which slowly can expand the group that's doing things the right way. And maybe one of those guys that's part of my group is also part of another group. And so then it spreads. And I think that's a really, really important concept that I took from the book, is lead where you are, be an example where you are, influence where you can influence. And even if you just do it with one person, in this case, in this story, what you did is you took all those one-off leadership situations, and then it all kind of came together at the end where, hey, now we've put together this whole framework of who we are. And again, the process, as you said, in real life is probably slower, but I do think all those things apply for sure.
Yeah, that's a great point, Mike. And you know, we all would love to have the you know, I'm dating myself, and but I mean, the Tim Tebows, you know, when he's at Florida, you know, or the Michael Jordans, the guys that when they speak, people listen. You know, the guys that are the rah-rah leaders that can lead essentially a whole team in mass. But the reality is those are so far and few. I mean, that's the exception, not the rule. Almost everybody listening to this, probably everybody, doesn't actually have a player like that that can pretty much snap their fingers and the whole team leads. It's going to be leadership by individuals along the way, like in this book. Or the reality is you're going to have two or three people talking over here at lunch, or two or three people talking in the minivan on the ride back from the game that a dad is driving, something like that. Those are going to be the conversations that actually lead your team forward or backwards, because that's going to be that group think. And it might only be two people or three people, but it's still a group. And they're going to all have that same opinion eventually if nobody, you know, they're going to have the same opinion, good or bad. And so, you know, let's say you got two freshmen in a dorm room that are roomed together in college, or you got two freshmen that just came up from middle school and they're not playing much. And so they always sit beside each other on the bus. Well, you think that they're influencing the captain? They're not, but they can influence each other. And in the same way, if that atmosphere or that culture says, hey, you got to wait for the captain or the coach to say something before you do something right, then you're not going to have a good culture. So the more that as a coach that you can start developing that mentality in your players that you're all leaders. Now, you might not be the one that goes out for the referee. for the coin flip in football, or you know, for that rules meeting at half court. You might not be someone that has a C on your chest. You might not be someone that has that asterisk or that C next to your name on in the program, but you all can be leaders because you all can influence one another to do what's right. And that's what we tried to get across in this book. And you know, the whole book is really about verbal leadership. You know, we hear all the time, people will say, well, I'm not much of a verbal leader. I'm just I lead by example. Well, a lot of times I call BS on that, because the mentality, we're all, unless you can't speak, like literally you can't speak, then you can be a verbal leader. When you encourage, you're being a verbal leader positively. When you complain, you're being a verbal leader negatively. We can, if we can talk, we can be a verbal leader. And so this whole book is about being verbal leaders just in those little pockets, you know, in the corner of a truck stop while your phones are charging, you know, because right. That was the outlet that you found, the electrical outlet. And you and your buddy are right there waiting for your phone to charge. You can be verbal leaders by affirming, confirming, affirming the culture that you guys have, or complaining, knocking things down, knocking people down.
I think that part of the problem is that there's a misnomer with what a verbal leader is. And what you described just now and what you share in the story in the book is that each of those players who was a verbal leader was doing it on a very small scale, a personal scale, maybe a 1-to-1 or a 1-to-2 ratio. Whereas I think a lot of people have that vision of a verbal leader being the Tim Tebow guy who's talking in front of a locker room of 90 college football players, who's constantly barking out instructions during practice or during games. And not that that's not a part of verbal leadership, because it certainly is, but I think people don't necessarily think of those small, quiet, behind-the-scenes conversations that can take place that aren't showy, that aren't flashy, that aren't seen by everybody. Sometimes those small personal moments can have just as big of an impact as the big showy ones. And I think sometimes that's where I think verbal leadership gets confused, where people say, oh, I'm just a leader by example. Well, yeah, maybe on the practice floor, you're not the person barking out things all the time. But if you're in the locker room putting your arm around your best friend and talking about how you can make things better for them and for your team, that's another form of verbal leadership that I think came across really well in the book.
Yeah, I'm definitely dating myself here, but in the movie Hoosiers, Jimmy Chitwood would not be described as a verbal leader. He's not the rah-rah guy, but he says he has three lines in the whole movie or something, right, and exactly. Each one is pretty powerful.
For sure.
You know, sometimes people will listen. Sometimes, you know, you do have that person, but more times than not, as coaches, we've seen that yahoo after practice or in the middle of practice will just say something, just yell it out, like, come on, or, you know, will just be obnoxious. You know, they're trying to be a verbal leader, but they're the one not working hard, or they're the right one not boxing out. And yet they're the one trying to be a verbal leader. And we all know that it's fake. It's you know, it's fake verbal leadership. You know, what happens afterwards is more important than what happened right then. You know, and I think you used the right word. It's a misnomer. It's a misnomer to think that verbal leadership only takes place in those rah-rah moments. More often than not, it takes place in those quiet, those one-offs or those quiet conversations that you have on the way home or the way to a game or in the cafeteria, those kind of things. Just like, you know, a player will get better with their shooting, you know, essentially in those unseen hours, those times when no one's in the gym, when no one even knows that that person is shooting free throws or working on their game. That's when that person's getting better behind the scenes. And I think the same thing happens in leadership with our culture, that a culture is built in those unseen hours when most people aren't seeing what's going on, almost like an iceberg. You know, the majority of an iceberg is underneath water. And so I think that's our culture. And so in this book, I think there's going to be a lot of things that people can relate to. We had about 12 high school and college coaches that were on my advisory team, plus a couple student athletes, current college student athletes. And so they were advising us and helping us along the way, because I wanted to make sure that it was a book that people could find realistic. Certainly not every word and every sentence is going to be 100% realistic in anything you do, but I wanted the majority of it. I didn't want it to be too cheesy, and I didn't want it to be something that was way, way too preachy. And so, you know, whether or not we accomplished that, at least my advisory team thought that we did a good job. And especially from the student athletes, that's what I really wanted to hear. And we made some changes based on their recommendations on some different areas and different chapters, because I wanted a player, you know, if you're a 15-year-old and you're reading this book, you know, because the coach made you or your mom gave it to you for Christmas or something, I want you to think, man, I could see myself, man, I've seen that happen. That's happened to me. I understand that. Man, this, you know, I never thought of it this way.
Head Start Basketball, along with members of the J. Billis Skills Camp staff, will be hosting the very first Prime Skills Camp, an affiliate of the J. Billis Skills Camp that is held annually in Charlotte, North Carolina. Prime Skills Camp will take place on the campus of Western Reserve Academy, just outside of Cleveland, Ohio, June 26th through the 28th. And will be designed for boys rising to grades 6 through 9. Prime Skills Camp will mirror the J. Billis Skills Camp in daily programming, teaching, coach-to-camper ratio, and quality of instruction. Prime Skills Camp brings all of the team-oriented individual instruction, focus on the fundamentals, and high-level coaching to young men aspiring to a high school varsity basketball experience. This camp is operated by Billis Camp veterans and includes the J. Billis Coaches Development Program alongside the camp, ensuring that the quality of teaching and coaching at this camp is second to none. Please visit headstartbasketball.com or jbilliscamp.com for more information or to get registered. The other thing that I liked that I thought had an impact on the realism of the book was the fact that, you know, after all these things take place and the team has come together, and then we're coming towards the end of the story, and it wasn't a fairy tale ending, and we won't, spoiler alert, we won't give it all away, but it didn't necessarily end up, you know, all puppies and roses at the end of the story. And to me, that was something that as a reader that I definitely noticed, because it's not necessarily what you expect was going to happen based on sort of the lead up to it. And so I thought that was a touch that, to me, made it seem much more realistic that, hey, even though we had all these things go right, it doesn't mean that every single time the ending is going to be a fairy tale. And I think that was something that helped me as I was reading it to feel like the story was more real and more relatable to me, as whether I was looking at it from an athlete perspective or from a coach perspective.
Well, you know, when Disney gets their hands on this, it will have that fairy
right.
tale ending.
That's right, exactly. Exactly.
But that, you know, yeah, scene. that was certainly something that I wanted to, I didn't want it to have the fairy tale ending. But also, you know, on the flip side, it's not a bad ending. Like it's not like
Correct.
You know, they don't get in a bus crash, or they don't you know, spoiler alert there. We stay away from all, we don't deal with tragedies or legal issues in this. But you know, there's no bus crash at the end. There's no, someone gets arrested at the end. So it's not a bad ending either. It's just an ending, like you said, that you don't expect, but it's probably, I think, more realistic, than most books would have ended, as you say, but I, you know, I like the way it ended. Certainly I'm biased, but, I thought that it was something that, even to the very end, that players could maybe pick up on some lessons. It wasn't just, let's wrap this up. I wanted to, right till the very end, hey, this could be something that I could see happening. This could be a way that a player would address other players or talk to other players. And you know, we were talking about verbal leadership before, and it's not till the end that any player actually addresses the whole team. You know, all these conversations take place with just two or three people, and they all start to realize that they need to do something different. But it's not till the end that they actually all come together and realize that they all had these conversations independently and that they talk it out and what this means for the team. So it's not this rah-rah. It's not this fairy tale ending where they get together and it's all, you know, rainbows and butterflies. They had already started to make decisions that, hey, we're going to change, we're going to do something different. And then they realize that other people were doing the same thing. And I think I guess where I'm going with that is a lot of times we feel like, well, it doesn't matter what I do. And I, you know, you see this all the time in, like, let's say politics in an election. Well, my vote doesn't matter. Well, it might not matter in the presidential ballot, but it might matter in your local issue number two or in your mayor's race. One vote might matter. Well, a lot of times as a player, well, I'm just a freshman. I'm just a bench warmer. What does it matter? You know, it doesn't matter if I change what I do. Well, if you have that opinion, but then other people have that opinion, nothing gets changed. But you never know. You might be the person that if you're the one that speaks up first, all these other people all of a sudden are like, hey, yeah, you know what? I've been thinking the same thing. I just didn't want to say it. You know, and so you never know what's going to start, what's going to get people going. And you mentioned that, you know, the multiple effect, or, you know, that, you know, you do something right, then someone else does something right, or and someone else has a friend and they influence this person. And, you know, I think of the wave. You know, you and I have both been at major sporting events where they do the wave, and never once have I ever heard someone come over the loudspeaker and say, all right, everybody, this is a favorite time. We're going to do the wave now. And it's going to start in section 103. You guys are going to start the wave. It never comes over the PA, and it never comes on the Jumbotron. It's just one yahoo deciding that they're going to do the wave, and then they get another yahoo to do it, and another yahoo. And before you know it, the whole stinking stadium, 80,000 people, are doing the wave.
Yeah, it's true. And I think when you were talking, what came to my mind is, you know, as we talk about how the effect of leadership and thinking that, well, my one vote, my one thought, my one action isn't going to have that big of an impact. And I kind of go to that theory of marginal gains, just thinking about how you improve yourself in any, you know, in any task that you might try to attack and get better at. It's, you know, if I can get 1% better every single day, eventually those 1% from one day to the next don't look like much, but 100 days from now, a year from now, all that time and effort that's put in ends up having an outsized impact. And I think that's the same situation that we have here with these small acts of leadership, these small conversations that maybe in and of themselves, while those players were involved in those conversations, they might not have thought that, hey, this is going to have a really big impact on our season and turn around what we're doing as a team and what I'm doing as an individual. But I think as the story went on, and I think if we were to follow this team and these guys through, you know, the sequel to the bus trip, you know, I think you'd see that they would come to the realization that those small conversations were far more powerful than maybe what they originally thought because of that theory of marginal gains and that multiplier effect that you talked about.
Absolutely. And ultimately, as coaches, you know, the coaches that are listening to this, ultimately, you know, yes, we want to win games and we want to be really smart with our X's and O's. But ultimately, the majority of these people that we're dealing with on a year-to-year basis, these are our future business owners. These are our future employees. These are our future husbands, wives. You know, these are the leaders of our community in the future. And I know that gets a little deep, but we're essentially dealing with people that 5, 10, 15, 20 years from now are going to be the main people in our community, good or bad. And so what are we doing to help develop them so that they are making good choices, they are making the right decisions, that then they can influence the world and be the change that we'd like to see in this world? You know, whether or not what your perspective is on the world and, you know, just in general, we can always do better. And so are we developing people that are going to have the skills to be able to handle adversity, to be able to handle successes, to be able to overcome challenges, to make other people better? And so, you know, yeah, it helps for our team and it helps us build a culture and it helps us win. But ultimately, you're right, you know, a sequel, you know, what are they doing, you know, when they go out in their first job, their interviews? What are they doing when they have kids? You know, all that kind of stuff, that's a multiplier effect. If we do our job as coaches at developing young people, then, you know, maybe they're going to then, you know, be better in our community and their kids are going to be better. Their kids are going to be developed a little bit better because we did this all these years ago.
Yeah, I think that the book does a really good job of breaking that down and making it easy to understand. I think the story is very well written. It's easy to follow. And yet at the same time, I think it, you can take it really deep. If you're a coach out there and you're looking for a book to, you know, use as a, you know, as a, for a book group with your team, I think the bus trip would be a great choice, because there's so many different things that you can pull out of it. And, you know, as we get to the end, there's 10 principles that end up getting pulled out. And I think that each one of those 10 principles that gets revealed through these conversations ends up being something that you as a coach can take and be able to pull out and really draw conversation out of your players, which ultimately hopefully can have the impact, Jamie, that you're describing. I want to ask you one more question about one of the characters in the book that I found to sort of be the most just interesting. And I'm just curious for your perspective on Mr. Frank, the bus driver, and his sort of role in the story. He kind of floated in and out of some of the conversations. So I just wanted to get your thought on where Mr. Frank came from. Was he modeled on somebody that you knew in real life? Just talk to me a little bit about Mr. Frank, the bus driver, as a character.
Well, I don't know if you're setting me up, giving teeing it up for me or not, but my dad's name was Frank.
Okay.
And my dad was not necessarily like the bus driver, the bus driver, there's a little part of it where we go into his backstory, and that's pretty much my dad's backstory. And my dad was very well respected everywhere. He was a local politician, and everybody respected him. So Mr. Frank, the bus driver, his background is my dad. His name is my dad's, but, my dad never dropped the wisdom that Mr. Frank had. Mr. Frank seems to be just absolutely perfect. He has the right thing to say every point in time. But, you know, I've had bus drivers, or I've had people that accompany us on trips, or maybe people just in the community that come to every single game, maybe an older couple that just seem to speak wisdom and have a different perspective on things. Sometimes maybe they don't get caught up in the winning and losing. Maybe they're the people that after the game, you know, they're saying, hey, you know, Johnny, that was a great job when you did this back in the third quarter. And Johnny's like, well, I missed a bunch of shots. And they're like, it doesn't matter. We saw what you were doing, and you were doing the right things. You know, there's always seems to be somebody in your community or around your team that seems to have that kind of perspective. And so I wanted to put someone like that in there, because I also didn't want it to always come from the coach. I knew I wanted someone to be, speaking life into the kids that wasn't just the coach. So we put him in there, and, it was an honor to my dad to use his name. You know, hey, that's what happens when you're the author. You get to write.
That's
you
it.
Get to write and then name them however they want. Like one of the stars of the book is named Jalen, and that's my son, Jalen.
That's so awesome. I mean, that's what it's all about. That's what being an author is all about, right? You get an opportunity to take that creative license and put it in there. And I really enjoyed the Mr. Frank character, just because, again, like you said, he kind of stepped in and was sort of that old sage who shared some wisdom that kind of confirmed in a lot of cases what the kids were talking about, or pointed them in a direction that I think they were probably already headed, but got them even thinking more about some of the topics that they were discussing within the fictional conversations within the story. So I thought that was very well done.
Thank you. And you know, if any coach wants to get copies of this, certainly it's on Amazon. But we can get you a cheaper rate than Amazon if you want to buy multiple copies. And so they can go to thebustripbook.com, thebustripbook.com. And they can get team copies at a significant discount from what Amazon gives you. At that same site, thebustripbook.com, you can get chapter discussion guides. So every chapter, there will be a one-page thing that you could take your team through. And those are free. So even if you decide not to buy the book, you can still use those chapter guides and still probably lead your team and get some good discussion from your team, just using that as a framework for some discussions. It seemed to be pretty popular with one of my other books, The Leadership Playbook. A lot of teams liked going through the chapter discussion guides. So on January 1st, we'll be dropping those for anyone that wants to get those and lead their team through that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think that's awesome. If you're going to take your team through the book, I think when you have those ready-made, the ready-made questions and discussion guide, I think that makes it easier for coaches, despite the fact that, you know, it's not like we all have a ton of time. So to be able to have that ready-made and be able to have it right at your fingertips to be able to go in and utilize the book. And for coaches that are out there, I, like I said earlier, I think the bus trip would be a great choice if you're going to do a book group with your team. You take it through, and there's so many different directions that you can go with it. And although the premise of the book is simple, I think you can take it and make a lot of deep conversations with your team that's really going to have a benefit, not just to what you're trying to do with your culture and your team in a given year, but also, as Jamie has mentioned throughout the conversation tonight, to have a greater impact that hopefully your players can take with them. And it's still going to be something that's going to impact them long down the road after they're, you know, after they're out away from you as their coach, and they're out in the quote real world. I think there's application here for everybody. So Jamie, we can't thank you enough for jumping on with us tonight to share and talk about your book. As I've said numerous times tonight, I thought it was very well done. I think anybody who buys it is going to feel that they got more than their money's worth. And the fact that you're throwing out the discussion guide as well as a part of it, beginning on January 1st, is great. So thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Hey, we appreciate the opportunity to come on. I love your show. Keep up the good work of that you're doing with coaches and trying to help grow the game.
We're going to do the same thing. Jamie's also a professional speaker, and not only that, but he also has his own podcast called Success is a Choice. So make sure you check that out and give him a listen. And to everyone out there, we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. As you've listened to the Hoopheads podcast, one common topic that continually comes up in our conversations is character. I'm fortunate to be associated with the Positive Coaching Alliance, a national nonprofit movement that provides valuable tools, training, and resources for coaches, athletes, parents, and administrators that is centered around sports and educational psychology and organizational behavior research. PCA combines this research with practical advice from a national advisory board of top pro and college athletes and coaches who utilize PCA principles at the highest levels of competition. Through a partnership with our local Cleveland chapter of the PCA, we are pleased to offer a discount code to allow you, our listeners, to take a PCA online course for just $20. To take advantage of this offer, visit the store on positivecoach.org and enter the discount code HOOPHEADS20. That's HOOPHEADS20 with two capital H's. Coaches, I hope you'll take advantage of this great offer from the Positive Coaching Alliance and help us continue to grow the game.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.